Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim. And joining me, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Gabe, it's a little bit belated, but Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, man. Nothing was happier than having a little day off last week. But, man, there was a lot of fights to watch. And appetizer fare. But still, we got something beautiful to look forward to this weekend. Let's get to it.
Programming note. This will be the last show till about 8-9 months from now when football season kicks off again. Tonight we are starting at 7 p.m. We're going 90 minutes, but starting next week we go back to our non-football schedule starting at 8 p.m. Eastern. The show will still be 90 minutes, and quite frankly, folks, the reason why we're starting at 7 p.m. tonight is that I want to watch the championship game with an ice-cold Dr. Pepper from Lully Culpepper to watch the Buckeyes and the Oregon Ducks. So let's get started with round at number one. It's showtime from the MGM Grand in Viva Las Vegas, a triple header headlined by the WBC heavyweight title. Beware, Bermain Stiverne at age 36 takes on the undefeated Deontay Wilder, 32 up, 32 down, for the Bronze Bomber. In the co-main event for the WBC Junior Featherweight title, champion Leo Santa Cruz faces Jesus Ruiz. And in the opener, what could be a fan-friendly affair, junior welterweights in action, Fidel Maldonado takes on the young master, Amir Iman. Gabe, Deontay Wilder, is it fair to say, even with the Malik Scott fight, and again, I'll go on the record, and I'll eat crow, I was dead wrong on that fight, that 32 fights in, Deontay Wilder has never had, quote-unquote, a real fight?
I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I don't think that's unfair to say. I mean, I think it's accurate. And it's kind of a trip. I mean, you look at it, was Jason Gavron supposed to be the guy that gives him rounds? I mean, he gave him four. But it was really like the senseless beating of a guy that that shouldn't have been in the ring. You look at the Malik Scott fight, and I was talking last night on Leaving the Ring with Dave about it. You look at that Malik Scott fight, and most people are like, wow, some people think it was a fixed fight, Bermain Stiverne being one of them. Some people think that, Harris didn't want to get, or Malik Scott didn't want to get up because, they're friends or whatever. They had some sort of agreement. There's nothing really out there to support that. But the fight is so short that you can either say that Malik Scott was never anybody and he was just a gym legend and you dismiss him, or you have to be really impressed by what Wilder did to him. That's kind of a wild card on his resume, but the rest of it is soft as the mashed potatoes.
If you take a look at this fight, it's interesting. Bermain Stiverne, I look at him as a guy right in his physical prime, if not a quote-unquote young fighter. Gabe, he's 36 years old. And that actually surprised me when I looked it up. And here's an interesting stat I just tweeted out about 15 minutes ago. From 2012, 2013, and 2014, now this is life with Don King in the new millennium. He fought one time each. But everyone is saying, and this is the conventional thought that is picking Stiverne, he's the better technician, he's got more experience. But you just wonder, is it that much of a sure thing? The thing that I go back to is a fight that we talked about numerous times, Gabe. We were there at the Fantasy Springs when a guy by the name of Harold Sconyers didn't just buzz the Bronze Bomber, he decked him. And I think to a certain degree he was saved by the bell. In my opinion, I think Wilder is dangerous. He's certainly a natural puncher. He's got natural heavy hands. He's got some good speed, tall and rangy. But I still get the sense, whether there's going to be erosion or rust on Bermain Stiverne, I think he is the more technically sound, fundamentally grounded fighter. And with that, Gabe, I think after the third round, that bell rings, I think it'll be all Stiverne all the time. I'm going with Stiverne to retain his WBC heavyweight title.
Yeah, I'm leaning that way too. And, you know, people can look at his inactivity. You know, he hadn't fought since, last May. But he's a Don King fighter, so he's used to it. I don't think it'll be a problem for him. He will come to fight, and he'll be ready to go. And I agree with you. I mean, look at the pins, really the chopsticks on Deontay Wilder. And I have to think that, you know, Stavern, his reach is only 3 inches shorter. He's got an 80-inch reach to Wilder's, I think, 83-inch reach. So it's a bit nominal there. But the legs, when they meet, that first clinch is going to tell us a lot. Who's going to get knocked off the block? And I think it's going to be Wilder. I think he's going to get pushed back. Now, you know, could the scenario exist where he is matched well with a guy that's going to be kind of bullying towards him? And also waiting. Stavern likes to wait and sit on the outside sometimes, a little bit too long, waiting to be explosive. He could get stuck out there. But, I mean, is it likely that this fight is going to show us just how good Wilder is, and it's going to show all the depth that he's got? And it's also going to break the curse of an Al Haymon fighter in his first big step up that's also a mandatory winning. That usually doesn't happen. So I'm going with Bermain Stavern, probably by late stoppage, maybe like, you know, round 10. And to throw one last thing on it, Dave said this. I thought it was interesting. A lot of people look at Wilder and see Michael Grant. But Dave pointed out Michael Grant had a better resume heading into his big fight with Lennox Lewis than Deontay Wilder does coming into his.
He absolutely did. I mean, he still beat a pretty dangerous Andrew Golota. He beat a pretty solid and steady guy in Lou Savarese and some other guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that statement is completely off base. I think distance and spacing are going to be key. Now, even though Wilder's a taller guy, might have a slight reach advantage, I get the sense Stavern is a very good pocket fighter. And as Chris Areola found out with those buzzing right hands that came over the top of lazy jabs, he is an expert counterpuncher with a real good sense of timing. And if he's allowed to work in that pocket early on and get comfortable, then this fight becomes an absolutely one-sided beating. Here's a tweet from Evan Young at Boxing Forecast. He says Wilder is going to surprise many people with his dismantling of Stavern. Gabe, Leo Santa Cruz, I just find this interesting. And the backlash that is on this young man, and a lot of it has to do with his association with one Al Haymon. Now, I don't know if that's fair or not. I mean, he's even taking criticism for naming his son after his advisor. You know, I'd argue if a guy had that much of an impact on my life and my family, maybe I'd name him after Al, too. Is the criticism of Leo Santa Cruz fair or unfair?
I think it's fair, and that fans that pay to see him want to see him in good matches. And he's also, you know, a title holder, and I think a certain responsibility comes with that. We all grew up in an era where champions were acted like champions, and they didn't say, you know, things like, I'm going to just obey this guy and or dismiss a guy like Rigondeaux because his style is difficult for you. I think we want more out of Leo. But at the same time, you know, Steve, if a billionaire guy was advising me, and it basically taken me under his wing, got me mad, you know, big paydays, and done a lot for me, you know, maybe I'd be grateful too. You know, it's easy for us to criticize on the outside. And I've been very critical of Leo, but I also have never been very big on Leo. So I guess, I don't know, he's also not telling us he's the best fighter in the world and then fighting, you know, soft matches that he handpicks and charges pay-per-view fees for. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's warranted if it lasts, I guess.
Yeah, there's a part of me that actually feels bad for Leo. And I've known this young man for a few years now, and I've covered him extensively throughout all the different variations of his management and promotional situations. And I think the difference is, as you mentioned, he's not necessarily thumping his chest. He's a very compliant young man. He doesn't have a lot of guile, doesn't have a lot of savvy in dealing with the media. But you're right, he makes himself look very bad when on one interview he says, I'll fight Rigondeaux at any time, then as if on cue, when it's time to actually do it or provide that opportunity, he takes it right back. But I don't think the delusional thought process or the lunacy is there with, let's say, a Peter Quillen or an Andre Berto. But again,
right,
just 2-3 years ago when he's fighting five times, one of the most active fighters, fan-friendly style, headlined on CBS, this guy had all the momentum in the world, and last year,
yes,
he became the quintessential Haymon fighter. His activity slowed to a crawl, and after fighting another overmatched guy in September, Jesus Reed is a tough, experienced young veteran. He's actually a year younger than Leo Santa Cruz. He's got a really, really solid, tough record, 33-5-5. But every time he stepped up, he's been stepped on. And I think the odds for this fight are very lopsided. And I think, again, fans may like a fighter, but there comes a point where they all reach a boiling point where they say, wait a minute, are we watching sporting events or are we watching predetermined exhibitions? And I think Mr. Santa Cruz is feeling the brunt of that. Gabe, am I nuts for thinking that Maldonado, Amir Iman, for pure back-and-forth action, might be the best card, best fight on this particular fight card?
No, you're not. It's a really intriguing fight. I think that, Maldonado was bounced back from his losses. You know, there's a kind of losses that, you know, he builds character, builds careers later on. He got caught and stopped, back in, April of 2012 against Fernando Carcamo. And then he comes back with a really tough loss, with Michael Perez. But since then, he's rattled off a bunch of wins with no contest. And he comes into this fight kind of believing in himself. He's a rangy guy for the weight, 5'8", 72-inch reach, southpaw. I think he's got a real shot to win here, but I lean towards Imam. I just think he's going to be the stronger guy. I think he's explosive. But a guy like Maldonado is going to let us know the depth and the quality of Amir Imam's record. And I think it's a very good fight.
In my opinion, Fidel Maldonado at that 8-10 round level is one of the very best, most entertaining television fighters. I enjoy his fights because he's vulnerable, he's exciting, he takes chances, and he punches a lot. But I don't know if he has that full 12-round ceiling where you say to yourself, this guy can win a title and hold it for a while. Amir Iman, 15-0, 13 knockouts, 24 years old. I get the sense his ceiling is a little bit higher. I feel as though he might be a little bit more versatile. Gabe, I'm with you. I'm going to take the young master out of Albany, New York, to win this fight. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to call in, we'll take your queries in a few minutes, 347-215-7598. And if you want to send us a tweet, you can do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Send in a question, comment, or a critique. Gabe, the other two big news stories from last week involve stuff that happened outside the ring. Andre Ward has signed with Roc Nation Sports, and then Golden Boy came out on Friday from Lance Pugmire of the LA Times, settles its disputes with Al Haymon and Richard Schaefer. So in short, Golden Boy retains the likes of Amir Khan, Leo Santa Cruz, Lucas Matisse, and Pauly Malignaggi, among others, and they get a fat check from Al Haymon, who walks away with the likes of Danny Garcia, Adrian Broner, Peter Quillen, Lamont Peterson, and a host of other fighters that they essentially promoted but did not have contracts under. Also, Richard Schaefer, I believe that situation is over. I'm being told he's going to be put on timeout for a while before he returns to the boxing business. Gabe, going back to the Ward Roc Nation Sports signing, I think this was a fait accompli. I think people could see this coming a mile away. Now that saga is over, Andre Ward has only had two bouts since December of 2011 when he won the Super 6 against Carl Froch. What's the game plan here to get him back to that place where people thought he was the heir apparent to the likes of Roy Jones and Floyd Mayweather?
I think he's got to fight the right fights with the right fighters. I think that's the first time back, which it looks like it's going to be the spring, which is like, you haven't fought in 2 years, and all of a sudden you have to wait till the spring. It doesn't make any sense to me. But that must be when the next date is. I think you take an easy one back, get your feet wet. You've been out for 2 years, and then you go right to it. I think you look for the big fights. I think maybe Froch, I think certainly he doesn't deserve a rematch for what happened in their fight, but he deserves a rematch for what they did before, for what he's done since. I don't know if Froch wants that fight, but that's a fight I'd look for. I'd look for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I'd look for action fights that are going to please the fans. And I would go on a shut the media up and shut the fans up tour if I was Andre Ward. I'd pick the toughest fights, and I'd try to beat people's ass and get them out of there. That's the only way he's going to get out of the hole that a lot of this has kind of put him in with the public. I mean, contract is his business, and his business is his business. But there's a lot of arrogance. I think a lot of bad will. Just a lot of back and forth that I think he needs to fix. But fighting the right fights would probably be, you know, the big step.
At the end of the day, boxing fans and sports fans in general are very, very forgiving. If you produce, you shall be forgiven. What I want to find out is where does he really stand on the HBO totem pole? Because from the time that he was brought aboard HBO, kind of sort of in the same time period of Ken Hirschman, who was basically his biggest advocate that helped the star-making process alongside with Dan Goosen with the Super Six, back in 2011, HBO was not in the Golovkin business. They were not in the Kovalev business. Canelo was just a young prospect. Soon, Golden Boy got thrown off, but now they're back. So you know what the pillars and the foundation of HBO are. I think that if Andre Ward would have just kept his nose down to the grindstone and kept working, he might be the face of that network. I don't know what climate he comes back into. Now, you figure Ken Hirschman will always be a supporter of his, but I'm telling you, that particular attitude towards Andre Ward at that network is not unanimous. And there are many other people that would rather ride the carriage of other fighters. And it'll be interesting to see what Andre Ward does. He's made it very clear for the time being he is not moving up to 75. And I've always said, if you're going to take on unappealing fights, you at least better be entertaining. And I go back to that Edwin Rodriguez fight last year that I was ringside for. That's just my personal opinion. I was bored to death, as were the 2,000 people there in Ontario. But Andre Ward is back. Look for him to fight sometime in March or April. Gabe, did Golden Boy get what they wanted out of this whole thing? Because I'm just wondering, when it's all said and done, they got their fighters back who are under contract. So what was really gained, in your opinion?
Well, they got that few million. I think they stopped the death of their company, I think. I think they would have been gutted further had Oscar not stopped this and not put Richard Schaefer on ice and then and do the lawsuit. But, you know, it's hard to say, you know, what they really got out of it. You're right. They ended up getting their fighters. And some of the fighters, like, I look at, like, Lamont Peterson. Wasn't he with Golden Boy? I mean, and like, it seemed like people were acting like they were going to be with Golden Boy. They ended up with Heyman. I think Schaefer and Heyman have gotten away with a lot here. But I think the bottom line for them is, what did they get out of this? They got away with not having to be in a long legal battle. I mean, Oscar's got probably some very deep pockets. But he's on his own now, and he's be fighting against a guy that potentially has Al Heyman as a backer, and that guy's got way deeper pockets. And that's all lawsuits are ever about, is a game of financial chicken. Who can hold out the longest? So I think they dodged a bullet here. The damage was bad, but they still have Canelo. That he's still Oscar De La Hoya. And I think ultimately things will be okay. But it's kind of one of those fights that nobody really walks, you know, the fighters walk away and people left something in the ring a little bit. They'll never quite be the same. And I think there was some damage here, certainly. It's going to take a long time to repair it.
Yeah, in talking to someone at Golden Boy, the one thing that they were really shooting for was a new beginning. And last week they signed a dozen new fighters. And if you look at the landscape, obviously Al Heyman has a very, very deep roster. I mean, when you have a roster that could essentially be two scholarships full of Division I football teams, you have a lot of fighters. Now, looking at Golden Boy, they have Hopkins for another fight or two because Bernard's not going away. Obviously, they have Canelo, who's the foundation of that franchise. You have some young guys that I think are very pivotal, Gabe, like Randy Caballero, Antonio Orozco, Joseph Diaz, Shabransky, that need to develop. Obviously, Frankie Gomez is still in that mix, and you have some veterans like Mauricio Herrera. David Lemieux, I believe, will be a Golden Boy fighter relatively soon. So it's not a bad roster. And the other thing they have is they have a revived relationship with HBO. So I certainly don't think they're going to be shuttering their doors anytime soon. But I think that this was a very, very ugly chapter for Golden Boy Promotions. And I know a lot of their employees are just relieved that it's over. Gabe, before we get to the phone calls, a couple of tweets here from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. How badly do you think Heyman wants/needs the belt from Stiverne with NBC on the horizon, Gabe?
I mean, there's very few things more valuable in boxing, if anything, than an American heavyweight champion. So if he gets that, and Wilder, you know, if he wins in impressive fashion, dismantles Stavern, knocks him out, after being tested a bit, maybe even dropped himself, or at least hit enough that we go, okay, he could take a punch. He's a real commodity. He's a hell of a personality. He's, you know, every day as big as a Klitschko, and he'll suddenly become a threat. So you could point and say, this guy could beat a Klitschko. I think if Al wins that, he's even firmer in the driver's seat. And just to jump back to Golden Boy a second, you know, just some dark horse picks. I mean, I really like Jason Quigley. He's going to take years to develop. He barely turned pro last year. But when we had Freddie Roach on Leave It in the Ring about a month or so back to end the year, I said, who's the guy that nobody's talking about in your stable that's going to be a breakout star in 2015? And he said Frankie Gomez. Now, if that comes to pass, Frankie could be, not the greatest interview in the world, but he's a fun fighter and he's getting better. And if he continues to improve, Golden Boy's future, things turn around when you pick up a couple little bits of talent that turn into something. And JoJo Diaz, I think, is a star in the making, and certainly going to be a fun TV fighter. So I think they're going to be fine. It's just, everything that happened, like you said, I think at the new beginning, I still think we need to see more of, just how big Godzilla is with Al Haymon. I don't think we've seen everything that he has to offer yet.
Marcus Bellinger, am I right to be cynical about the possibility of Froch Chavez happening on March 28th? Now, Gabe, let's take a look at the full scope of this. Al Haymon /NBC is reportedly going to make their big splash announcement this Wednesday with quote-unquote specially invited members of the press, which means the likes of me, you, and any other boxing website who is not pro-Haymon. We're getting turned away at the door, okay? They want to control that narrative. They don't want any of the tough questions asked. What I've been told is that two Haymon-affiliated promoters, Leon Margulies and Goosen Promotions, they have hold on venues on March 7th and March 28th. And it's been widely speculated that Froch Chavez, if this plan is hatched, will be on NBC. And that would be big. But there is an issue here. Chavez still owes Top Rank a fight, and according to Bob Arum, Honest Bob, who would, of course, never lie to me, says there's been no resolution in regards to that particular issue. Now, can things change? Absolutely. Can they write Bob a big check to make him go away? Sure they can. But as of now, Marcus, I would agree. I wouldn't hold my breath. I'd be hopeful, but I don't know. Froch Chavez, I have a feeling Bob, Gabe, he's just not going to walk away gently into the night.
No. I mean, he's invested way too much. He shouldn't. I mean, they've done so much for that kid's career. And, the kid is just, I mean, it's like you've seen the past. Born on third, thought he hit a triple. I just don't see Bob White walking away without making a big payday like this. Yeah, I have a question for you. On Wednesday, and granted, you and I are not invited to that press conference. You don't live in New York anyway. But regardless, is Al going to announce that he's got a promoter's license? Or, because this is like the announcement of Al's shows, but he's an advisor. How is all this on the up and up? Did he just swallow those other companies so he could just be using their promoter's license? And is that legal?
It hasn't been deemed illegal, but does it seem to at least warrant an investigation into whether the Ollie Act is being violated? Yes, because someone asked me this. Let's say you're an Al Haymon fighter, and he offers you X amount on this series against a pretty tough fighter in a good fight, and you say to yourself, wait a minute, why is that guy getting more or as much as I am? I deserve more, and I want more. Well, at that point, does Al Haymon put on his advisor hat, or does he act in the best interest of his television series and his investors? That alone seems to be a very, very stark conflict of interest. It'll be interesting. But as of right now, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Gabe, in canvassing those who are involved with Haymon Boxers, whether it's fathers, trainers, co-managers, promoters, guys who carry the spit bucket, guys who shine their shoes, Nobody knows when they're fighting. Now, the rumor is March 7th, Adrian Broner could be leading off this NBC series. But again, we probably won't find out till Wednesday. And Gabe, you, me, and many others will have to read about it on Twitter. So anyway, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're here for another 65 minutes. Then it's time for the national championship game. But call into the next round, Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
All right. And that little segment right there is why you and I are not going to the press conference. In the 3-2-3, you're live on the next round. 3-2-3.
Happy New Year, gentlemen. It's Andrew from USC, the only son. What's going on, fellas?
Hey,
what's
you're
up,
leading
man?
Off. What's going on, Andrew?
I'm just, you know, doing some work. First day of the semester, getting ready for Oregon to take the first national championship game, Pac-12 homer.
Yes, yes, you are.
But I find, real quick about college football, don't you find it great, Steve, that the SEC is not in the first title game? I love that.
I do. There is a certain irony, and the SEC West just crashed and burned. But you know what's amazing? 4 or 5 years ago, when they first started Pacquiao-Mayweather negotiations, if you would have told me that a college football playoff, even a small form like the one we have here, four-team format, would happen before Pacquiao-Mayweather, I would have said you're nuts. But in looking at it, it really is an indictment on the sport of boxing.
Yeah, no, I think it really is an indictment. That fight should have happened years ago, but apparently it's going to get announced in a couple weeks, if you believe the Twitter rumors. Where are we at with what are you expecting from this Heyman boxing thing? I know Heyman's a smart, true businessman, and I know he wants the NBC thing to succeed, so I'm a little bit optimistic. I think he might put on some decent fights. I know I have a feeling they'll be better than Garcia Salca. What are you expecting? And what do you
I am hoping this, what, for the best. Here's my take on this from the beginning. If the guy makes good fights and he puts on entertaining programming consistently, I'm good with the guy. I am. I wonder, though, if you're Showtime and you're watching this after the garbage he shoveled down your throat last year, like Salca, Edgar Santana, and it's just generally poor matches up and down, what are you thinking if you're Showtime? And given the fact that NBC is actually getting paid for this, that's a time buy. Showtime was actually doling out millions of dollars. If you're Les Moonves or one of those hires up at CBS, at the Viacom Corporation, aren't you asking a few questions of your underlings?
No, definitely. I believe heads will be rolling if he starts putting on very competitive, exciting fights at NBC, and I guess Mr. Espinosa will be called into the principal's office when that happens.
You know, we're going to see. But again, it's all about the fights. Let's see if next year, because I've said it before, and I'll say it again, the two guys on the spot or the two entities on the spot in this current year now is Stephen Espinosa and Showtime and Al Heyman. Put up or shut up.
Definitely. Two more points before I go. How soon do you see the Lemieux Triple G fight getting made after he finalizes a deal with Golden Boy?
Gabe?
That's. I don't think they go straight to it. I mean, you know, Triple G's got to beat Martin Murray first, and that's not a gimme. Although I expect him to win, but that's going to be a tough fight, I think. So I don't know. And I think Lemieux is an interesting guy. I mean, they were building him into something of an attraction up in Canada. Now he's deciding to come down here. And normally I would say it's a mistake, but in his case, it's a good-looking white guy with an exciting style and a very friendly, like, interview-friendly personality. So I think the sky's the limit for that guy. And I think it would be, I don't know how smart it would be to throw him right in there with Triple G without testing the waters and see if you can build something with it, you know?
In my personal opinion, and again, if Golden Boy has him, they're not in a rush to get all their guys beat. And I think, as Gabe mentioned, I think that Lemieux can be developed into at least a regional draw out there in Montreal based on the way he looks and the way he fights. I think that fight, and again, I know people hate using this term, I think that fight could marinate a little bit.
Definitely. I think it'll marinate. I was just asking because that'll calm the storm of Triple G Canelo with them being both at HBO, and if Triple G keeps winning and Canelo's there, you know, let's give him Lemieux so we can, you know, spin around from and get away from Canelo. Now, lastly, our guy in Oakland is making an appearance this year. As much as I hate it, as much as I don't want to see him in the ring anymore, he's coming back, and we need to be realistic. He needs to be realistic. He's not fighting the Heyman guy, so he's not – Chavez is out of the door. He's not fighting Frotch. Frotch wants no part of him. Who's he going to fight? Saki Obika 2, the Durrell brothers? He needs to just move
Felix Sturm
to 175 and take out Kovalev, and that'll put enough emphasis on I'm back and I'm here to do some damage. I mean, who's he going to fight at 68 that will give him that kind of stature right away and bring him back to what apparently he thinks in his mind is a pay-per-view star?
Another issue is, let's say HBO says, okay, we're going to be realistic in a sense that there's going to be ring rust, you haven't been out a while, even though this was self-inflicted, this delay, we're going to give you a tune-up type of battle. That's all well and good, but guys, then you got to agree on the price. Now, I have not seen the Roc Nation contract with Andre Ward, but I think it's safe to assume it's a very, very lucrative deal. Deals of that nature can only be adhered to if a network fully supports it. So that's all well and good that HBO says, hey, we're going to be in the Andre Ward business, but what are Andre Ward's minimums and expectations as it relates to the level of opponents and then the fight purses that he receives? So it'll be interesting to see what they do, but I'll be honest with you. Andre Ward has said himself that he needs a couple of tune-ups. And you know the way Andre is, he will always think safety first, second, or third. So don't expect him to fight King Kong or Godzilla coming right back.
Well, when I was back in Oakland for the break, and this is very credible information, I heard he got dropped a couple times when he was getting the rust out up at King's Gym. So all I'm saying is, who's he going to fight that after the rust that's elite and brings in the ratings? Because we know he ain't bringing no revenue to the table. I mean, he can't fight Frotch or Chavez. So.
Yeah, I don't – you know, again, that's interesting. You know, gym tales, you hear a million of them. And you know what's funny? If what you're saying is true and you have good sources and he hit the deck, the way Virgil Hunter and Andre Ward are, they're not going to try to take any punchers on if all this is true.
Yeah, no, I heard this from a credible source that trains at the King's Gym, his old gym where I get my haircuts in Oakland. So, but just, I would like to see him put on entertaining fights. I don't knock him. I knock his business acumen, the lack of it, and his idea that he's the greatest thing walking in the fight game. But I would like to see, as an Oakland native, him put on entertaining fights. But he's put himself in a position where, he's with Roc Nation. He can cancel out any Heyman guys and any other money guys at the division. So he's really, like, stuck. He has to start putting out entertaining fights to get the public to clamor for those other guys.
Yeah, and he's under a certain set of pressure because he's not necessarily entertaining, and that sometimes becomes a variable. Listen, we got to get going, okay? You have a great new year.
Who you got?
Thank you very
much.
You know what? I think Oregon wins, but I like the points in Ohio State from a betting perspective, but don't bet the farm on it, as they say.
All right, gentlemen.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7599. If you want to send us a tweet, you could do so at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, who's next?
347, you're live on the next round. 347.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, Gabe and Steve. How are you guys doing?
Amilcar, welcome aboard.
Yeah, I was actually going to talk about this Stavern fight coming up, but I just want to jump off a bit on what the guy just said, the last caller. Did you guys catch the last episode of the Fight Game and that kind of mini tirade that Jim Lampley went on about Al Heyman?
You know, I heard about it, but I don't watch that show, to be honest with you, Miller.
Fair enough.
Oh, no.
Well, essentially, I tweeted about it, I think maybe a week or so ago. Essentially, he was kind of blaming Al Heyman for the whole situation where fighters are like looking at risk versus reward and are not really getting in the entertaining fights like they used to, right? My whole thing is, I grew up in the 90s. I grew up watching Roy Jones Jr. I remember those like mismatches he had, and I'm very interesting. Yeah, I'm very interested in seeing how they're going to approach this whole situation with Andre Ward, because, like the last caller said, who is he really going to fight if he doesn't move to 175? It's actually going to be worse than the type of stuff we've been seeing with Al Haymon.
Here's another issue. To turn this back to Haymon and HBO, HBO created, empowered, and enabled Al Haymon. Okay?
Totally.
Because that Andre Berto situation and some of the other stuff that took place, Adrian Broner at the end, that farce against Vicente Escobedo, I think Jim, if he wants to tell the whole story and give a full scope of exactly what happened, has to put some of the blame on his own network. Now, going back to Andre Ward, I think one of the issues that Andre Ward has, and where I'll always disagree with him, he believes that being the best super middleweight and being this mythical number two or three pound for pound really means something. What means something is how many people, how many eyeballs do you draw? How many asses do you put in seats? How much do you entertain? How much do people like you? He always tries to make it like us fans don't care, because he's said it before. I don't care what the fans think. I'm not here to entertain. Well, that's fine. Then don't expect everyone to embrace you. That's one concept I don't think he has any understanding of.
Yeah,
I think it's really tough getting back.
Okay.
I mean, he's a 168 champion, but usually when people clear out a division like that, they move up. And yet, what is above him? Two guys that are very, very dangerous. And like you said, all he does is think safety first. He's in a really untenable position, and it is absolutely incumbent on the network not to let Andre Ward cruise and just kind of, you know, do whatever he wants. And like you said, mirror Roy Jones. I was never a Roy Jones fan, precisely for that reason, that all I watched were mismatches. And the sport went away from being competitive to being, you know, a showcase bout. And then I was being kind of sold that it's because this guy's so brilliant. I'm not buying it. And in Ward's case, it is true, but he is very good. But we're going to need some good fights out of him.
Well, he may be good, but I don't want them flying in, you know, sanitation workers from Australia for him to fight. Like, if he's on HBO, he needs to be fighting HBO-level talent, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I do agree with something you said earlier, which is that I don't agree with the comparison between Deontay Wilder and Michael Grant. I think Michael Grant was ahead at this point in his career. I think a more appropriate comparison is with the other Al Haymon fighter used to play second banana to, Seth Mitchell.
Really?
I don't know if you guys remember that fight with Chad Witherspoon where he made him do, like, the chicken dance a little bit. And I said to myself, this guy's going to get knocked the hell out the minute he steps up. And then guess what happened? His very next fight, he fought a guy who knew how to fight, and he got knocked the F out. So I've seen Deontay Wilder do that chicken dance, and I think Stavern's going to bring a little bit more out of him than that. I think he's going to be looking up at the lights on Saturday. I've never been convinced by athletes who convert into heavyweights. He's another one of them, and I can tell you that stock that Bermain Stavern comes from, like, he's another one of those dudes that kind of trained in those gyms in Montreal. And he's a good fighter. I do not think that Wilder is going to get anywhere past what Seth Mitchell got to in terms of being brought up by Al Haymon.
I think one of the issues that I have with the development of Deontay Wilder, and maybe the Malik Scott fight was supposed to be the one. He's never had to swim in deep waters. I mean, he's literally been in the kiddie pool for 32 fights. And say what you want about Michael Grant. He got off the canvas to beat Andrew Golota. And to me, that showed me something. We have to be honest here. Lennox Lewis is a lot more imposing than Bermain Stavern. That's another variable, though.
That's true.
True. Very true. Before I get out of here, what were your thoughts on the Rigondeaux fight? I know you guys didn't do a show last week. didn't get to talk about it. But A, what were your thoughts, and kind of B, where do you see him going now that he's had that fight?
Gabe?
I thought it was an entertaining fight. You know, I'm kind of somewhere between the guys that go totally crazy and say, see, he's finally exciting, which, you know, I think he's very capable. I've said it all along. Anybody can be exciting if they're matched well, particularly a classic boxer like him. But he fought a game under, you know, overmatched guy. It was kind of awkward, and I think that worked for him when he got the knockdown. But it was not, to me, like a real fight of the year thing. I mean, I think it was a heated battle, and we're not used to that with Rickendow, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't Castillo Corrales. So I thought it was a fun fight. I just think, you know, he's going to come around and continue to have fights like this. You know, it's not a personality contest. I don't remember Marvin Hagler. I think when he finally kind of hit the limelight heading towards the Leonard fight, then you got to see his personality. But I never thought of him as warm and fuzzy. And I don't think Rigondeaux is either. You know, but he's somewhere between Andre Ward and Hagler, I think he's. But I think the language barrier also makes him kind of come across as a little bit bitter and angry. It's not my experience in dealing with him. I don't know where he goes, man. I mean, how many superstar little guys are there in any case? You know, and who's going to fight him? That's going to be the thing.
There are a lot of rumors, and I guess he was there last Friday at the theater, that Rigondeaux might go to Roc Nation. Now, I would love to see Roc Nation just to see the Twitter reaction of doing a doubleheader with Andre Ward and Guillermo Rigondeaux. I think that might be more entertaining than anything that goes on that night. But Amilcar, you know what I thought that day in Japan?
Yeah.
When all this stuff happened is, and something that kind of vindicated what I said for a long time, that was a horrible look for the number 3 pound-for-pound run of one Nonito Donaire, because on that day, Omar Narvaez, who went the distance with was absolutely obliterated by Nanu Inoue, who's a fantastic little fighter, moving up in weight, who faced him at his weight class. And then Rigondeaux actually looked very much human at times against a guy that wasn't all that good, while Donaire was riddled. And it just gave me further confirmation the pound-for-pound lists are nothing more than mental masturbation. Amilcar, as always, thank you for the call.
All right, thank you, guys. And anyone who hasn't checked it out, check out that thing you did with, yesterday, Gabe, with Rugged Man. That was a really good interview. You guys did a fantastic job. It was a nice surprise
so much,
on
man.
A Sunday.
Sweet.
All right, take care.
All right.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a tweet, you could do so at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. At the top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes and the fight review. Gabe, who's next?
646, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Steve, and how are you guys? This is Domingo from New York.
Hey, what's up?
Domingo, what's good?
Hey,
off the bat, no stupid shit about breaking contract. We don't want to hear it. I'm being dead serious about it.
No, definitely. Quick question about you guys. What do you think about the, you know, who you think got a better deal for from the Golden Boy and Al Haymon? Because, you know, he got a lot of good fighters, Al Haymon, but, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, they're not really committed, you know.
I think Haymon and Schaefer, I think they did as well as they could have expected. They didn't get hit with this $50 million punitive damages. Haymon gets to walk away with most of his fighters, and I'm hearing that Leo Santa Cruz, who we know is very loyal to him, that contract is only in for another year. He gets Maidana also. Amir Khan, I mean, without Al Haymon's help, does Amir Khan have a lot of options? I don't know. I get the sense, and we didn't bring this up earlier, guys, that Oscar De La Hoya must have a closet full of skeletons that Richard Schaefer knows about, all the messes they've cleaned up, the lawsuits, hush money. Maybe Oscar's like saying, do I really want to make this public again?
You know,
why don't I just move on with my life?
that's an astute observation, and it, you know, I didn't really even think about it. I mean, I thought about it a few months back. I remember when there was, for a flash, there was like I think it was back in July, or I don't know, I was in Los Angeles when it happened, but there was new pictures that were rumored of Ox. And then they kind of like flashed out for a second, and then they went away. And I kind of wondered at the time if that was like Richard kind of flashing some of the cards.
The missiles?
Yeah. Yeah, just saying, you know, this could get a lot worse. I mean, that's, you know, that's great gamesmanship, and like I said, it's what litigation is. It's a game of financial chicken. How much can you take? And I have to think that Richard, in pulling something like this off, allegedly, probably protected himself pretty well. So that's a good theory.
Hmm.
Yeah, but guys, they're getting guys like Broner. Have you seen the last picture of Broner? You know, he looks worse than Chavez Jr. Thurman hasn't fought like in a year, so...
Well, Thurman fought in December, but you're right. He had a very bad 2014. And Domingo, about Adrian Broner, if you put a little red hat on him, he looks like rerun Stubbs. I mean, he is awfully heavy. And that's a What's Happening reference for all of our younger listeners, as I date myself. But Domingo, very simply, though, you're a boxing fan. You're a hardcore boxing fan, given the fact you call us. If NBC puts on good fights, aren't you good with Heyman at that point?
I actually, one thing I like about Heyman is, and I think I told you before, is he hasn't really been with a fighter who's basically complained or you know, who's claimed fraud. So I don't have any beef with him because I haven't seen him, like, taking advantage of his fighters. On the other hand, what I don't like about him is the picking and choosing. But then again, a lot of promoters do the same thing. You know, they protect their own fighters. You know, Barron protected De La Hoya. He protected a lot of his own fighters. So, you know, if he puts good fights, I'll see it.
Yeah, I think that's the general attitude of everybody. And again, I think Wednesday will be a very interesting day. My only question is, guys, and I hope someone asked this, is who is going to protect the quality control and the standards at NBC? Who will be the firewall between Al Heyman and the network to say, wait a minute, don't give us Rod Salka or Edgar Santana. Give that to Showtime. You did it all of last year. This is NBC. We need to protect our brand and our viewers. That, to me, is the number one question that needs to be asked on Wednesday.
Guys, quick one last question. Is this basically the end of Heyman being on HBO and Showtime and things like that? Do you think that's the route?
Gabe, I said this before on Twitter. I don't think he leaves Showtime because they're paying him millions of dollars in license fees. NBC's a time buy. I don't see him completely abandoning ship there.
No. I mean, if the time buy, you know, going to NBC begins to really pay off in terms of advertising dollars or something, you know, that maybe I see him jettisoning that, but Al doesn't seem like a guy that really, like, burns bridges. He kind of moves to other ones. He lets people try to burn bridges with him, I guess, in terms of the way HBO said they're not going to work with that guy anymore. But I think, I see that his fighters will be on as many networks as he can get them on.
Right. Domingo, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Take care.
Another rumor is that Spike Network will be going into the boxing business, and I'm hearing from more and more sources that could be the exclusive purview of Mr. Alan Heyman. Here's a couple of tweets. Here's one from DJ Macadocious. Steve, if I had to watch Ward and Rigo on the same card, I would throw up in my mouth.
Wow.
And here's one from D98765S. The next round, we had a bet and have over-under on Tito mentions during the show. Today's show is three mentions, and he says every time that Tito is mentioned, they take a shot. So all I got to say is, Tito Trinidad, viva Puerto Rico! So go ahead, take one right there. And here's one from Jew Free.
Tito Trinidad.
Yeah, so take another one, you son of a bitch. Anyway, here's one from Jew Freeze. I predict the fighters who were originally Golden Boy Promotions who left with Heyman will be fed to the original Heyman fighters. You know what? I'm not sure about that. Heyman likes to be his own island, and I mentioned this in my article today, Gabe. I know for a fact that the Golden Boy brass would love to do a Mahrez-Santa Cruz fight. Now, Abner Mahrez, his contract ran out with Golden Boy. He is now with whatever Heyman is. I think that puts that fight in jeopardy. I don't see Al Heyman in a rush to help a company that excommunicated his guy, Richard Schaefer.
Right, and also, I mean, Leo, you know, the guys that are loyal to Al that are just running off their contract, are they going to be rejecting fights? Is he going to be rejecting fights? It may not necessarily be over. And I think what you alluded to, that's a big reason why Oscar kind of took some money. They took the hit, and they're just like, screw it, let's just move on. He said they're breathing a sigh of relief, and maybe they're breathing it for a different reason than we think. Added to which, I think they should take a shot because you know Rerun's last name. That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Stubbs.
347-215-7598. I'll admit I've watched every episode of What's Happening on Channel 9 in L.A. as a kid. I will fully admit that with Raj and Dwayne and Shirley and all of them. Anyway, we're here till 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, just in time for everyone to go watch Ohio State and Oregon. Top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes and the fight review. Gabe, who's next?
In the 6:02, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's going on? Happy New Year, Steve and Gabe. How are you guys doing?
Good. Who is
I'm
this?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year.
Yeah, this is Brandon from Phoenix, man. I haven't got a chance to call the show in a little while. And I always listen, but just, I've got kids and stuff now, man.
All right. Welcome aboard, Brandon.
Anyway, I just want to say, a lot of exciting things this week in boxing. Potential Mayweather-Pacquiao talks. And I don't know if you spoke on that yet, Steve, if you think it's true or not. The Rock Nation deal, we finally know what's going to happen with Ward and it's a good heavyweight fight that we got going on. So I think, we got some positive stuff to look at this year. We got some clarity on the Oscar Richard situation, the Oscar Al situation. So just positive stuff. The one thing I will say about the Ward deal, I do agree with you guys that it's going to be when you look at the 68-pound division, it's hard to find out who he's really going to fight in that top 10 and on that top 10 list because half of those guys are European. And the other half are Heyman guys. So I really don't know where he's going to go with that. What do you guys think?
That's a great question. Gabe, tell me a guy that's not Golovkin or Kovalev that HBO, Rock Nation, Ward, James Prince would all find amenable in accepting while paying him a very, very pretty penny. I can't think of one right off the top of my head.
No, not somebody that's going to come here. I mean, you look at the division, I'm like, who could he possibly fight? Is it going to be Andre Darrell? That's not going to happen. James DeGale? He's not going to come over here. Would Andre Ward beating George Groves or fighting George Groves mean anything to anyone at this point? Other than he's beating a guy. Would you see that?
Go ahead, Gabe. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying, yeah, I agree with you guys. There isn't anybody. If you look at the division, who is he going to fight?
It's just, to me, it's when you think about it, he's kind of a prisoner of his own accomplishments as far as 68 goes, because he's good enough where he's proven himself against that level of opposition. And the only other person that you can really see him up against where that you'd be intrigued by is Kovalev at 75, and then, Triple G moving up. It's almost kind of the same thing that Triple G is going to go through this next year here. At the end of the year, depending on who he gets to fight, whether they're big names or not, I think Triple G starches out everybody else at 160. I'm kind of just waiting for the Ward fight. That, to me, that's the only one where I really wouldn't bet the farm on him. You know what I mean?
Brandon, the difference between Golovkin and Ward is they could each fight the same level of opponent. Golovkin's much more fan-pleasing. People say that's unfair. I say that's just a fact. This is the entertainment business. And it's clear with Golovkin, one way or the other, they're going to try to consolidate as many of these belts as they can while trying to obviously get a big fight. Now, I don't know what's going on with Cotto Canelo. I've heard those things are just moving at a snail's pace, and I know certain people are getting very, very antsy. But I think, as Gabe said earlier, I don't see Golden Boy throwing in Canelo with Golovkin immediately. I really don't.
No,
so
you can't do that. It doesn't make any sense, especially in the depleted, stance that Golden Boy is right now. They're trying to regroup and get it together. You don't put your cash cow in a fight where he could get hurt, similar to the way that Fernando Vargas got hurt against Tito Trinidad taking another shot. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't see that. And I'll make two more quick points and I'll get off your guys' airwaves here. I definitely agree that Santa Cruz definitely has to take some flack. I mean, you got to step up and fight good fights when you're holding on to the green strap at a very good weight division with exciting fights in your weight division and above you. you know, that could be possibly made if a boxing politics ever worked out.
You know, Brandon, if he would just take on a Scott Quigg, who I like a lot, or Carl Frampton, who I like a lot, both guys have made it very clear they're willing to punch their passport and take a flight. Abner Morris, that's a good local matchup too, but I'm telling you, the last three or four guys he's faced, it ain't exactly murderer's row.
Yeah, it's just, it's not that he has to fight Randy down necessarily. As long as he's fighting some decent people, you know, we cut him some slack. You know, and that's really all we want, just fight some decent folks. And then as far as the heavyweight fight this weekend, I like Stavern if I had to put some money on it. But the one thing I will say about this, because I'm not going to repeat the points everybody else made, that Wilder hasn't fought anybody and he probably has a glass jaw, is that Stavern is a counterpuncher, and I think he's going to give Wilder some time to settle into the fight. So I think that worked out a little bit better for Wilder versus somebody like maybe a Areola, a better version of Areola, who would probably take the fight to him a little bit more early. So he's at least going to get to relax when he gets in that ring for a good 2-3 rounds.
Interesting point. Brandon, enjoy the fights this weekend.
All right, man. You guys have a good one. Take care.
Absolutely. If you want to call in, we're here for about another 35 minutes on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. This is The Next Round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. That number, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
407. You're live on The Next Round. 407. 407. Boom.
We got a first knockdown of the year. Yeah, jeez.
Wow, that only took us into the second half of the fight.
You know what? That was like a Trinidad left hook. Anyway.
It was sudden with silence. 714, you're live on The Next Round.
Hey, what's up, guys? Great show so far. A lot of great topics that are being talked about here that gets everybody exciting to start off the year on this great sport that everybody likes and enjoys. But I have something to say or to make a comment about. I'm a huge boxing fan, and I try to go to probably four or five events, live events throughout the year. And I just want to throw this out there for people that also like to go to venues and see a live fight. You know, something that got me, like, really, really discouraged. We flew out to Vegas, to the MGM, to the Alexander Khan fight.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just a quick example, you know, bought tickets online. And when we got there, and as you guys know, the arena was in, you know, pretty much full. Well, you know, purchased tickets online through Ticketmaster. And the person that was actually sitting in front of me purchased his tickets that same night. And he bought tickets for $50 when I bought tickets for $200 where I was sitting.
Can I give you a little advice?
Can you? Yeah.
Let me just, and I've written about this. I've tweeted about this. Anyone that buys tickets early or the day of the event for most events, okay, not all, but most, you're a fool, especially as it relates to Golden Boy shows, especially when Al Haymon and Schaefer were there at the MGM Grand. You're better off just booking a room, booking a flight, and buying a ticket that day. Because trust me, they are available for Walmart prices.
You know what? And I learned the hard way. But, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there because I know that there's a lot of people that actually listen to the show and enjoy the show and probably do go to the fights. And to me, I was so pissed. I'm like, man, you know what? Who knows if I will ever go to another live event just because of that.
Guys,
because I felt it like, man, what a slap in the face.
Let me just say this.
Yeah.
The only event that I can remember this past year in the States, okay, that actually had a real robust secondary market where tickets were being marked up from face value, believe it or not, was Golovkin-Rubio at the StubHub Center. That was the one fight you should have got tickets as soon as possible. But most fights in Vegas now, if you want to be patient and you don't have to watch every single fight and you're willing to walk in at, let's say, the second or third fight, trust me, you'll get a rebate.
Well, good to know, and I'm glad that you're pointing that out. I'm a listener that listens all the time, and this is the first time that we're pointing this out, Steve. So, you know, great pointer for everybody out there. So I just wanted to bring that out.
Yeah, and keep going to the fights. Don't be discouraged. Keep supporting this great sport of ours.
That's right. Huh?
Is there anything else we could do for you?
No, just excited for this weekend. We'll see how it goes. But, no, that will do it for tonight.
All right. Thank you for the call, and have a great year watching boxing. And here's another issue. Gabe, I've been told that the actual real number of tickets sold for Stiverne Wilder, which, again, they gave it about 4 weeks to sell tickets, which is ridiculous. They've sold less than 1,500 tickets for this fight as of last week. So if you want to go to that fight and you didn't buy a ticket already, you're in the Vegas area, just stick around the MGM Grand. Trust me, there will be tickets to be had on the cheap. Gabe, let's go to the fight review real quick. Rock Nation debuts at the MSG Theater. Toriano Johnson and Dusty Hernandez rack up victories. And on Showbox, Evgeny Kitrov, the Ukrainian Lion, he scores a third-round knockout. Then Ivan Redkach, I thought he looked pretty impressive with a sixth-round knockout over the usually durable Yakubu Amidou. Gabe, the Rock Nation fights, let's just call them what they were. They were okay. I think Toriano Johnson's a pretty good, solid grinder. Don't know if he's really a world-class middleweight. Dusty Hernandez has a lot of work to do. But watching it on TV, I give them some credit, though. It had a lively atmosphere, it looked like, from my vantage point, and there seemed to be a bit of an atmosphere. Now, the key is, Gabe, once the novelty runs out and you can't get the A-list hip-hop celebrities, I think that's where we're going to really start to see what is Rock Nation all about.
It's about longevity. You're right. It's about actually having shows. And I think they've already taken a bigger and better step than Fisette ever did, Rock Nation. And they're a real company in terms of, you know, sports entertainment. And they hired real boxing people. They've absorbed some boxing people into their company. And I think those are smart moves. You know, you need people that have the lay of the land. It's like, you know, trying to sue somebody in a state that you don't have a lawyer in. You know, you don't know the land. You need to, they call them my pawns. And I think boxing, the East and the West Coast, and even, you know, the Midwest, those are different pawns, and different people know how to handle those markets. So these were very smart. I mean, yeah, I think Dusty and Tommy Rainone, those are two guys that are proven ticket sellers. When we saw Dusty Hernandez over at the Garden, I think it was Triple G Stevens, right? He was on the undercard there. And he brought a lot of people. Tommy Rainone is a guy you put on the undercard because he brings a lot of people. And so it showed savvy in bringing those two guys. And I think, you know, Hernandez-Harrison has some work to do there. I agree with you. I like the jab. I like his maturity. And he's a young kid. He's like, I think, 18, 19. He's got a ceiling. But, you know, like I think you mentioned it, a few people, you can have as many stars as you want in the audience. If the fights aren't good or if they're kind of consistently mismatches, who cares? Ultimately, you know, I don't want to see showcases. I want to see good fights. I like Toriano Johnson. I thought that was a really fun fight. He's an action fighter. I want to see him again and again. But they're going to need a flagship guy. And I don't think that's Andre Ward, to be honest, unless he wants to be an exciting fighter, can get those fights. It's, you know, one thing to be the best, it's something completely else to be must-see TV. And I don't think he's that. So they got a lot of work to do, but I like where they're going. It's a quality product. You watch it. I think the TV announcers could be a little more lively. I threw it out there. I'd like to see Winky Wright maybe be a fight commentator. Somebody threw back to me that they heard that they're talking about that or they heard whispers about it. But I think for a first show, it was very good. You know, I don't think it was all smoke and mirrors.
Well, you know, going to the TV broadcast, I'm a bigger fan of Gus Johnson than most. I think Gus was developing as a very good boxing announcer. I do, and I know that may not be a popular opinion. And I think Rich Murata lends a lot of experience and credibility, which you need. But
he does.
But as a huge Mark Tusharp Johnson fan, I nearly rolled over in my grave, and I'm not even dead yet, when my man Gus said, quoting a magazine article, that Dusty Hernandez Harrison is the best prospect from D.C. since Sugar Ray Leonard. Now, again, I know he covers a lot of sports. Someone needs to tell him, don't go with that, because there was Keith Holmes, there was William Joffe, there was Sean B. Mitchell, there was DeMarcus Coley, there's Lamont Peterson, there's Anthony Peterson, and there is the great Marcellus Joseph Tusharp Johnson. That's all I'm going to say. Gabe, even Kitrov, This was batting practice, wasn't it? Wasn't this like Mark McGwire in 1998 at 5 o'clock getting lobbed? Big softballs?
I mean, I've eaten frozen yogurt that was stiffer than that competition. You know, I was like, it was just brutal. It was kind of freaky to watch. I mean, it, you know, you're like, what is going on in this fight? Like, why is this happening? I just, you know, I think it was a short notice guy, but I just, there's got to be something.
Yeah, no, he was, and you could tell that Kitroff was trying to carry him a little bit, but this guy has natural power. But you're right, it was a late replacement. And as the great Michael Irvin would say about third-string quarterbacks, they're the backup to the backup for a reason. Gabe, Ivan Redcatch, you know, I'll say this. I think Robert Garcia and his style of training and what he likes to train, I think this is a perfect pairing.
Yeah. You know what I've noticed about Ivan is his punches are getting tighter. Like, his whole punching frame is getting tighter. And it's the shots are coming down the pipe. And the big thing that Robert Garcia was hitting him with over and over again was, look, you need to get out. You can't stay in front of this guy. You got to keep remembering this through the fight, that when you punch, you got to get out of the way, because he sticks around for the receipt. And this, I thought it was a very impressive win. I mean, Amadou was a durable dude. He's a strong guy. He's game. He was there to win. And even right before he got stopped, he was kind of not coming on, but he was being aggressive. And he was kind of darting in and out and being a problem. And Redcatch, man, he stayed in front of him too long. Redcatch just sat down on that left and put him down on his ass. I was very impressive. And it not only took a guy that moments before was in the fight and trying to win the fight, two knockdowns later, like 30 seconds later, the dude was looking for a way out of the fight. That, to me, shows some impressive power. I really like where they're going. Like you said, I think it's a perfect matchup, that trainer and fighter.
The last 3-4 years, I would see Ivan bounce around to different gyms looking for sparring, trying to get some work. And it always seemed a little bit unsettled. He was a little bit of a nomad, but being there every day at the Robert Garcia Boxing Academy, which has a lot of talent across the board from 126 to 147, every day, what do they say, steel sharpens steel or something to that effect? He's getting good work now, and Robert can give him the attention that maybe he couldn't get before. I think this is a very good pairing. It goes to show you, certain trainers work with certain fighters. Like Amir Khan, I think, is probably a better fit with Virgil Hunter than he is with Freddie Roach. Emmanuel Stewart, who's a Hall of Fame trainer, one of my favorites, Gabe, he simply did not mix or mesh with Chad Dawson. But when it comes to Robert Garcia and Ivan Redcatch, I think it's peanut butter and jelly. If you want to call in, that number, 347-215-7598. Gabe, by the way, what was your favorite Trinidad knockout? I think it may have been, for me, William Joppy.
I actually was going to say, is that William Joppy to get knocked out by Felix Trinidad? One of my favorite moves, because Mercanti's bothering Tito about it. Look, quit pushing off with your elbow. And the final finish, he pushes off with his left, hits him with a right hand. It just freezes him. It's just a beautiful knockout. I think that's about two more shots for them.
I hope whoever's playing this game is staying home to watch the national title game and not driving anywhere soon. All I could say is, Viva Puerto Rico, as Don King would say. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
And let's see. In the 510, you're live on the next round. 510?
Ooh,
actually, that's a knockout. They dropped off the call. And let's see. This is kind of all over the place. 310, you've been patient. 310, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, who is this?
Yeah, this is Freddie from Covina, California.
Freddie, what's going on?
What's up, man?
Hey, not much. If playing this game right now, I'd be totally wasted. I don't think I would be able to walk.
So if you can't walk, definitely don't drive.
Yeah. But, yeah, I guess on any normal the next round, I think you probably would have about four shots. But today is a little bit above normal. But anyway, hey, quick question for you guys. Actually, two questions. With HBO now going towards a, I guess, Netflix type of proprietary system. Do you think that has any positive or negative effects towards boxing?
Gabe, well, you should answer this. Gabe.
Yeah, I was looking at this, and you know, they haven't made a full announcement of whether or not – I'm hoping they do this, that it's not just that you can order HBO, you know, just for the month, but that you can parse it out and you can order the events that you want to see. They haven't made that clear. If it becomes that, I think it's great for boxing. For one, I think it helps them battle streams. If the fights are priced, you know, just right, where a fight fan can say, you know what, I want to support the sport of boxing. I want to actually buy this rather than rip it off because, you know, we've been getting ripped off for years. I think it could have a very positive effect, but it's really incumbent, you know. But even if it's just you can buy HBO a day at a time or you know, for a month at a time by itself, I still think that's a really positive move in the right direction for people that don't want to watch all the other things that HBO has but just want the boxing, you know, or don't want to be stuck with a cable package full of, you know, 400 channels you never watch. I think it's great that they're moving with the times.
Yeah, I totally agree, and it would be a lot easier because that way you can really cut the cord if you want and do things the legal way.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this then. As a boxing fan, how much listening on the radio do you do with boxing events nowadays?
Pay-per-views? Probably.
Well, no, I'm just talking about streaming. Like, do you stream fights that aren't exactly on the up and up?
Occasionally, more so on I listen to stuff on the radio for pay-per-views.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I have the full cable package. We pay like, you know, $135 a month. So, you know, everything's included, but if the pay-per-views are not. And then final question was in regards to Santa Cruz. If he wins this weekend, obviously they're talking about the Mahrez fight. Do you think that's a possibility that it might happen or will it get Haymanized down the road?
All I know is this. I talked to someone pretty high up on the Golden Boy Promotions chain, and they said that's the fight we want to do, and they wanted to do it as soon as April, not even May. Now, that was about 2-3 weeks ago before the divorce settlement came out. I'm just saying, if you're Al Haymon, history has been, you're not always willing to help anyone else that isn't named Al Haymon. So I don't know what it does for the chances of that fight. That remains to be seen.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thank you. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question, comment, or critique, you could do so at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, we have any more calls?
Yeah, we do, actually. In the 702, you're live on the next round. I think I know who this is.
What's up?
702?
Yeah.
Ooh, we had somebody.
We did. I think they disappeared.
They got joppied.
They did. In the 619, you're live on the next round. 619.
Hey, this is Juan from San Diego. How you doing, Steve? How you doing, Gabe?
Good, Juan.
Hey, what's up,
Happy
man?
New Year. What's going on?
Happy New Year. Nothing, just getting out of work and listening. And I actually had a couple of things to say, one for Gabe and one for you, Steve. Gabe, I was during the weekend, I was just tweeting and reading the tweets, and I noticed that you often get in fights with Mr. Nali Nagy on the Twitter, on my Twitter feed. And I was just wondering, why does that keep happening? Like, I think Paulie is just a bozo, and it's not worth just fighting with a guy that has such an obvious agenda. I don't think we can accomplish anything with a guy like that, man.
Well, I'll tell you this, and I'm probably done with it. I'm not, you know, people think I'm a big fan of Twitter fights, but I'm really not. I think it bothers people's timelines, and it certainly stresses people out. It doesn't stress me out. I kind of find them fun, but I think it's bad PR. But Paulie is spreading an untruth about me, and when I see somebody with a larger platform than me saying something, and a guy that was voted, you know, number one commentator or whatever from the boxing writers, people take that opinion seriously. So when I see him lying about me, I have to go after him and point it out. I just do.
I understand that, and I totally see where you're coming from. Yeah, just reading his hit tweets, he's very rude. And I used to think I was a fan of him. I was never a fan of his fighting style. Or I don't think he's a particularly good fighter. And never thought of all the hype. Why was it everybody high on Paulie? But I used to think, like, I used to like him as a commentator, but reading the comments he makes about you, it turns me off. I don't want to follow him or just – he annoys me. Now,
you know, guys, let's just say this, though. The public is not stupid. I think he's actually done a lot of harm to his own reputation publicly because we're not all blind sheep here. I mean, I read the timelines and I see some of the exchanges. I see the retweets. Sometimes I get tagged in them for whatever reason. And there is a huge backlash against Malignaggi, I would say, the last 3-4 months.
When we're in the middle of that, and maybe it's because I block idiots with impunity, but I don't get anybody really, maybe one person every once in a while in these fights telling me I'm a jerk. But I see, like, on my timeline, people endlessly going after Paulie hours after I'm done. So I think you're right, Steve. I think he's done himself a disservice. I mean, the guy that sells himself as being a truth teller hasn't really been that truthful, and he doesn't admit when he's wrong. And so, I mean, I think I'm done with it. I think I did my point, and I don't like to belabor it, but that's why I did it, was basically the guy's telling a lie about my style of reporting and something that happened in my life. And I, you know, I got to address it.
Now, Gabe, I must tell you, I'm a big fan of all your PD articles you've written throughout the last couple of years. I read them, and I posted them on my boxing forum. I'm a big, big fan. I respect you a lot because of that. And
appreciate it.
Actually, I used to train at a boxing gym and have personal strength and conditioning coaches. And some of them have become friends with me and my brother, and they tell us of all the dirty things that they do with the boxers. And I've seen them do it. So it does not surprise me when I ever hear things coming out or see guys with all those pimples in their chest. And it does not surprise me. It's just the best-kept secret in boxing. And to read about it and your comms, it's just being honest. And nobody's honest in this game anymore. And it just pisses me off.
There's a few honest people, but I hear you. You know, I remember, I'll leave that story for my book. But, it's fairly easy to get drugs in the sport, and they're everywhere. You'd be surprised the people that, you know, to address your thing about the pimples, you know, just so people know what those are, and we'll jump off of this. What happens is the guy does drugs all through training camp, and then when they make weight and you're sweating all that out, your body is getting rid of impurities, and boom. You got acne, or in some cases, backne. That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Now my last comment is it's a question for you, Steve. What do you think with this golden divorce now and the settlement? Do you really think what do you think of the job Golden Boy has done during their whole promotion career in development fighters? Because I know Top Rank does it. They've developed a lot of talent throughout the years, and they have the experience and the history of good. Do you think Gold Boy has actually gotten a good reputation of doing that? Because we all know Al Haynes can do that. But how about
in
Gold
recent
Boy?
Years, they've done okay. I mean, Mahrez was developed by them. Leo Santa Cruz was basically developed by them after they picked him up from TKO. I think that company has evolved. Now, in recent years, as it became so Haynes-centric, I think it handcuffed them a little bit. But, you know, I look at some of the development of, like, Joseph Diaz. I see Frankie Gomez. I think he has a future. Antonio Orozco. I think where you have to give Golden Boy credit, and they've made mistakes because everyone does, is that they have actually evolved. We're still talking about a company that's not even 15 years old and is no worse than the second or third biggest company in the world. So that in itself is something very, very very good, and something that should be lauded.
Yeah, I respect them a lot. I think they're done good in the long run, and I hope they do good with the new talent they find. I see that they signed like 12 new boxers. I hope they do good with those and keep the government new talent. They know how to do it.
All right. So listen, we got to get going. Thanks for the call. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Warren. Thanks so much.
Gabe, go back to the 702. Our guy Rob Palmer is back on the queue.
That's what I thought it was. Rob, you're
what's up, guys?
Boxing.
How's it going?
What's
good.
Up?
Happy 2015.
Yeah, happy 2015 to you guys as well.
You know what, Gabe? Yeah, just a shout of support to you. I've seen some of that stuff that's been going back and forth with Malignaggi. It's a real shame because Malignaggi was one of my favorite fighters during the kind of period where I really fell in love with boxing as a sport. And I really think he's a good announcer as well. So I'm really sad to see some of that stuff coming out of him. I don't know. It seems like he's just a bit of a Heyman mouthpiece these days. But, yeah, support to you guys on that.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I tell you one thing.
I actually like watching him fight. I've always given Paulie props. For a guy with no power, he fights like a guy with power. He goes in there and wants to mix it up. He's got a lot of toughness. I wish that he would just allow himself to be in a conversation rather than a monologue. But what can you do for you tonight?
That sounds the way. You know, actually, I was on another sort of like boxing show earlier today, and someone your show came up, and someone you made a criticism of this show. They said that you guys are too negative. So I wanted to give you guys the opportunity to come out and say something positive about what you're looking forward to in boxing this year and what's going to be good. Build up my hopes, guys.
I think that's an unfair criticism. I think we're real. In the world of today, people can't handle criticism, and they call it being a hater, which is a substitute for thinking. Steve and I call it, we joke. I mean, Steve brought up rerun Stubbs. I think it's very positive. But we're looking forward to Deontay Wilder and Romain Stubbs. And I was a big fan of What's Happening Now as well. You know, I think Oscar
really?
Freeing himself from his company, you know, is positive. I think, you know, there's a lot of positive things in this sport. I think it's very healthy. I think Roc Nation, if their goal is to kind of show Al Heyman that there's another game in town and that he's not the only guy that can dominate, I think that's great because I think that's what they did with the offer to Quillen. You know, Al's been driving up the prices for years. Finally, somebody did it to him. And he's had to make his guys step away and say, no, I got something better for you. Well, if he doesn't, it's going to be ugly for Al. So I think that's a very positive thing. I think that's an important.
You know, Rob, I'd like to think I tell the truth. My job is not to be positive or negative. It's to give an
right.
honest, unbiased viewpoint. And you can't win in these situations because if you're such a Pollyanna, people will say, well, geez, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, and he's a shill. So, you know, when something's good, you say it. And if something's a sack of shit, you say that because there's an old saying, you can't make chicken feathers out of chicken shit. Or something like that. So I don't say that. We never come in with this an agenda like, hey, Gabe, today let's be extra positive. I don't see how, based on what happened last year and how the fans were directly affected and the reactions that we see so viscerally and so quickly on social platforms such as Facebook and Twitter, would we have any credibility if we were telling people, God, 2014, what a year for boxing? Really?
Right.
Would you want
yeah,
to listen to that, Rob?
And honestly, I think, you know, I think people would be surprised that Steve and I, and we've done this, we're on like a couple hundred episodes now together. You know, we both do our own prep. We don't, Steve maybe sends me an email, says this is what we're, you know, some of the things we want to cover. And then we're just kind of on the fly. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe there's a more negative deep, but. You know, I guess, I don't know. All I can say to that is, well, I don't listen to their show, so I don't really care. I don't even know what show, any other shows out there besides Leaving in the Ring and this one. Those are really the only ones I watch. And, you know,
this wasn't people on the show talking about you guys. It was just somebody that called in that's a fan of both shows, and this was something that they mentioned. So I was just giving you guys the opportunity to show that there is a positive side.
Well, all I can say is nobody's forcing anyone to listen. I mean, that's just the way it is. Rob, anything else we can do for you?
Just that I'm going for Wilder by knockout this weekend. I think Stavern gets – I think he takes himself to the ropes too much, and I think he does that because he's fatigued. His stamina isn't what it needs to be a world-level fighter, and I think that plays into Wilder's hands in the early rounds. If it goes past six, then, you know, it's Stavern's fight, but I think Wilder's going to take him out in the first six rounds.
Rob, you live in Las Vegas. Are you going to that fight?
No. I live in Los Angeles, although...
You live in Los Angeles. Okay, well...
I did live in... next time I'm heading to Vegas is going to be for Brock Chavez, and I'm very... in fact, I'm very, very confident that fight's going to happen.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of which, Rob, thank you for the call. Gary Willis says, reports over here saying the Chavez-Frotch fight is on. Any news? You know, it may be on. I just wonder, does Top Rank step aside? Do they take a check, or do they try to block it, or will there be an injunction where Chavez will be allowed to fight? And let's see what happens. That's all I could say. Let's see what happens.
That's going to be, yeah, the fight for the fight is going to be quite interesting. And so, it's 7:07. You're live on the next round. Sorry, I'm jumping on there. 7:07?
Hey, what's up? It's Carl.
Carl, what's going on? We got a few minutes here.
Oh, up, man. Bro? You know what, man? Man, I was at a strip club the other night, man. A guy bumped on me, spilled a drink on me. I said, James, is that you? Well, I thought it was James Kirkland.
Oh, whoa.
Oh, no.
Wow.
I thought it was James Kirkland, for real. I mean, the guy looked dead on him, man.
I've been hearing that he actually is, was supposed to talk to 50 or something about getting a fight soon. But I'm not sure 50 is the guy to talk to about getting a fight. To me, that he's kind of negotiated himself into Nowheresville. I'm hopeful for James in 2015 to try to, you know, make the show more positive. But I just don't see it.
Oh, man, he's got the smarts of a doorknob, man. You got to help him out, Steve.
I'm actually being told that Kirkland, if Cotto Canelo does not come together, Kirkland may be in the mix here for a fight in Texas against Canelo. But here's the issue, though, Gabe. We've been down this road before. He could have had Canelo 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, he sure could have.
Yeah.
Didn't he price himself out or something like that?
Well,
he turned down $750.
Yeah. He wanted it and then he didn't want it, basically. He was like, I'll take the $750. Wait a minute, my shoulder kind of hurts. Can I have more? And, you know, he was listening to, I believe, Curtis Meeks, his advisor at the time. And things didn't go well. So hopefully this time around, he's, you know, everything kind of aligns and that he's physically ready and mentally ready to take the fight. And then he takes the fight.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Carl, who do you like this weekend, Wilder or Stavern?
You know what, man? My gut is telling me Stavern, but I would not be surprised if Wilder starts him because I don't like Stavern's stamina.
Hmm. Okay.
That's the only thing, man. You know what I mean? But look, I'm not gonna hold you up, man. This is a Mike McCallum, the body snatcher night for me, man. I'm about to get on this YouTube and watch the body
change. Truly a great 154-pounder. All right, Carl, thank you for the call. You have a good 2015. Gabe, we can sneak in one
All
more
right.
phone call if
All
we
right.
have one.
Let me see. 319, strange. 319, you're live on the next round.
Hey, this is Warren Worth. I'm dubbed up.
Warren, where have you been?
Just checking
What's
out
up,
from
man?
Behind the scenes, man.
All right, so what
doing?
Can we do
Please
for you?
See. Well, I wonder, have you thought about the possibility that Floyd is saying that he's coming to the negotiating table just to secure his May 2nd date and then, you know, at the last hour might pull out of the, you know, supposed almost done Pacquiao fight and select another opponent?
Warren, let me just say something. That is not out of the realm of possibility. I know there's more reports that are very optimistic. But again, I've been down this road. I've heard the same song. I don't know about you. Maybe I'm just a hard-boiled cynic now as it relates to this subject, but seeing is believing.
Yeah. And I've been wondering, because it seems like, you know, the thing started moving forward once it looked like Canelo was dead set on that May 2nd date. It seemed like all of a sudden he got progress on the proposed Pacquiao fight. So it's like kind of suspicious to me.
Right. And then there are other people saying that Les Moonves is putting the screws to Al Haymon, saying if you want any place on our network with your fighters, you got to make this fight. You know, I don't know if that's true. And Stephen Espinoza recently came out on Twitter and said that's absolutely not true. All I'm going to say is this. Till they actually get in the ring and they're touching him up, there's a part of me that'll never believe it.
Yeah.
I'm the same way.
And by the way, the fights this weekend, I got Stavern stopping Wilder.
Okay. Warren, great to have you back.
Yeah,
all right,
happy 2015.
Okay. That's it for this week's edition of The Next Round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. Folks, it is time for the national title game. I'd like to thank everyone that made this possible. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.